I actually was thinking maybe we could start off with a meditation. Can you maybe lead us, you know, while we're just getting settled here?
Happily. Start by taking a breath. Noticing that sensation of breath. Noticing the feeling in your chest, feeling in your stomach. Noticing the depth of breath without judgment, without feeling the need to control or affect it. And starting to notice other sensations in your body, wherever gravity is affecting you, and noticing points of pressure on your feet or on your seat. Maybe some points of contact where your clothing is warming your skin. And lastly, notice the sounds, whether they're close or far. Maybe beyond the ear pods or the headphones through which you're listening right now. And welcome to this moment.
Hey, friend. It's David Nabinsky here in New York City. So excited for this Portfolio Career podcast episode with Dennis Sarkozy. Dennis and I met when we both were experiencing changes to New York City in 2016 and 2017. It was an honor to talk about his journey and share some practical tips on designing your life around community and relationships. He also shares practical insights on storytelling, facilitation, and communication. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available at my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Dennis. Cool. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks for that invitation. I actually feel much more here right now, having arrived.
Likewise, likewise. Well, cool. Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinsky, is here with the one and only Dennis Sarkozy. How's it going, Dennis?
Really well. And having this slight feeling that a bit of my deeper, darker secret was just aired and saying, oh, lead a meditation, Dennis, as a meditation teacher or yoga teacher, or what I'm now often being known as is Mr. Self-Care.
So Dennis, if we were to go to an event tonight, how would you typically introduce yourself?
Generally depends on the audience. So even what I've often been talking about lately is contextual cognition. So depending on the group of people that I'm with, the event that I'm at will likely elicit a different type of answer. Anything from helping operationalize ideas to bringing culture and wellness for an internal group of clients or shaping employee experience. Externally, it's marketing and sales strategy or helping build community for a outside client experience. So much of the work I do is in experience design and operation.
And I definitely want to talk about a little bit Mr. Self-Care, because it's something that we've been talking about a bunch around town recently. But while on the topic of learning and development and tools, in conjunction with facilitation, any kind of initial resources or any ideas that you think are helpful for people that want to be a facilitator?
Few things. Yes. One, it's often helpful to have a background in classroom teaching. So outside of what I'd done is spend a few years as a classroom teacher, which I, you know, would suggest for anyone who's looking for practice, not suggest to anyone who's looking to, you know, generally make a viable living. Look for opportunities to speak to small and large groups, starting with the smallest group of people that will celebrate you and are excited to hear what you have to say, who are down for engaging in activities and leading the smallest activities, whether it's a group brunch or a group meal, in some sort of facilitated conversation. I realize I'm going to keep using the word facilitation, which is exerting any amount of design or control over the way a social interaction would form. Facilitation isn't simply speaking, so it's distinct from the audience and speaker relationship. And it's moreover a the facilitator is looking to create a prompt, create a situation, create a container by which the members of the audience can experience a topic. So it's shifting the role of speaker, which often has so much pressure. And that's what the number one fear ahead of actual dying is, public speaking. And facilitation, I think, is all but the kind of a covert backdoor way into public speaking and addressing, where while I'm the person holding the microphone or the person on stage, I'm not the center of attention. The crowd is the center of attention. And we'll speak for generally 90-second sprints, because we adult learners have very thin attention spans and generally say we max out between 2 and 4 minutes, and that's the best of us. So we'll speak in a very small amount of time to convey the knowledge and then discuss the prompt by which that we will get to interact with this, creating ultimately an experience around that new body of knowledge and then trying to move through the phases of learning. So similar to if you have a background in design thinking, it's that idea of planting the seed of an initial ideal. So that way we start moving toward an understanding and then starting to interact with it. So starting to form our own abstract concepts around it, testing them in real time with others, and then moving away with what is a product, or this is a viable opportunity to expand and move with this new idea and iterate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen you've done a masterful job of facilitating at Personal Development Nerds, which I'm extremely grateful for that community and your work there. And masterful job there.
Thank you. Also, I would say little secret number two. Yep. So have you met Dennis? He's a meditation teacher. Oh, have you met Dennis? He facilitates for Personal Development Nerds. Like, cool. Yep. Both of those things are very much things that I'm proud of.
Okay. So you mentioned Personal Development Nerds. Mm-hmm. You mentioned other self-care type of work.
Yeah. Well, I could take a moment to speak about Personal Development Nerds.
Yeah,
too.
Please.
So 3 years ago, I was still living in the suburbs in New Jersey, having what I thought was a perfectly reasonable life. Like, loved my life, had a very loving partner, had been promoted many times at different jobs, had pivoted careers a few times, was moving toward wellness consulting, had worked with a few nonprofits, and I thought things were going pretty well. And also thought that this is how adult life works. So I had this sense that was like, oh, so many of these things that I don't love about living in New Jersey. I was like, this is adulting, right? So it's like, you know, of course I have a loving partner who we have our ups and downs, but we've survived 10 years. And I have friends that I see, once a quarter or so. I have a family who knows that I would be there for them if they ever asked, and would be there for me if I ever asked. And neither of us really asked. And had stacks of books that were unread, and places that I had wanted to travel that I had never traveled. And in these moments was able to start comparing the mythologized life that I had against how I was actually living my days and spending my time. And Merlin Mann, in one of the early episodes of Back to Work, has even mentioned like the way we spend our day, that's our life. And I even remember, I don't remember my response to that words, but even as I'm thinking about that right now, it just gives me this chill and this tightness for how I was thinking in late 2016, thinking the life that I live on paper, that I think that I live of myself, is not how I'm actually living my life. That the minutes that I spend each day that add up to hours and days at a time, and ultimately a decade of professional and personal growth and things that I said mattered, did. And my number one and two priorities became my only priorities. And all of the other things fell by the wayside. And I called this being an adult. And in those moments of transition, so I was separating from my then ex and had wrapped up a number of contracts. So I was like, now what? And I was able to redesign my new priorities and looked back at those books and a map of places that I've yet to travel. And a feeling of something missing, namely around relationships and community. And was even thinking, I would often compare to like, oh, those were the high school days. And consistently would relate to like that feeling of walking into high school where everyone knows me and there's ample people that both know me well and know me thinly, and people that I know thinly and can get to know better, and people that I'm attracted to and are attracted to me, and people who like me and don't like me, but I was a part of something. I was seen each day. Mm-hmm. And even part of many companies and teams, it was still missing that feeling of that high school feeling is what I would call it. It was community or tribe. And it's a long way of saying, a dear friend, after, you know, about six people were like, how have you not heard of personal development nerds in October of 2016? I'm still living in New Jersey and I'm commuting to the city 3 days a week, just committing to being here, and would anchor my entire day and appointments that I made and friends that I saw and coffee dates that I had around the event at night. And my friend Jean was just like, that's it. You're coming to personal development nerds. Like, you've said enough. You've said enough keywords that you have to come. And I remember walking in season one, episode one, through the door, and had this feeling of tribe.
Mm.
And I look over and the number of, you know, Nalgene bottles with stickers of brands that I care about and copies of the new personal development books that I thought I was reading alone, and the initial conversations that I get into learning that we all worship the Bible of Tim Ferriss and we all listen to our podcasts at 1.5 speed, except this one, listen to this one at normal speed because it's worth every minute. And we all think that the next notebook will unlock all the secrets to our brains in the universe. And we're all in New York, seeking to do more, and are all but unwilling to accept our defaults, our default priorities, our default lives. And it took, I mean, I was hooked. So I then did not miss a meeting from that initial first one, season one, episode one, and grew over the years to become what I would like to say. You know, I committed in early 2017 to be just the number one attendee. And a few months into it, had said to myself, these are my people. However I can help make this idea happen and exist in the world, that is my role. Throughout, no formal invitation or permission, Giovanni and Sam had, we had met, but I was like, I'm going to be the one to show up first and leave last and help set up chairs and strike chairs and greet people on the way in, because I want to make sure everyone feels as seen as I felt on that first day. And Personal Development Nerds to this day is, you know, we're 2,000 strong on Facebook, and we have monthly events and retreats. And ultimately, we design any live experience around what the community needs. And if people want to come together for a co-work day, we'll spin up a co-work day. And if they want to do a quarterly review, we will facilitate a quarterly review. And if they want to meet once a month at a social or a picnic or a dance, or want to go out for a social challenge, then someone in the group, but generally like myself or Giovanni or some of our key contributors, we're like, easy. Like, we want this to exist as much as you do. We're just waiting for the invitation. We will build whatever it needs. Like, we're by and for the community.
And so Giovanni is Giovanni Beckford and Sam is Sam Heisel. Mm-hmm. And I think what I heard you kind of start off with was you wanted to design your life around relationships and community. And then you found this personal development nerds community, which I'm a huge beneficiary of it as well. And then you just continued to show up and find a way to get involved. And now you're part of the leadership team. So it sounds like that's really great advice for people that, you know, once they find a new idea, just to keep going, and then you'll never know where it kind of goes.
Once I find a new idea, keep going. Yes. Frequency builds a depth of knowledge and understanding. And particularly within a community, it's access to the inner circle of ideas. And I also came with it my own body of ways to help. Like, I had professional experience and personal experience in the years leading up to this. So as soon as I see an idea or a collaboration or a person that I meet that has a thing that they're working on or building, my initial thought, and this is so ENFJ of me, is how do I help accelerate and amplify the work that they're doing? And that's immediately where my brain goes to. So that's why even that question of what do you do is so difficult for me, because I'm like, well, what are you working on? Let's see what we can do together. or how I could be a resource to you, or how I could be of service to you, or who I can connect you to. And even at the point that I was showing up for PDN, Personal Development Nerds, I was showing up for a number of other communities because this is why I'm in New York. I'm a huge believer of that saying, bloom where you're planted. Mm. So I don't wish New York were different. I'm not trying to make it Reykjavik. I'm not trying to make it Osaka. I'm not trying to make it any other city, which are absolutely delightful, livable cities that I could happily spend another 6 months to a year of my life. Like New York, I'm here for a reason. And that's the communities and the people consistently show up. Mm-hmm. So if we were to say how to be a part of the things that matter is show up, you know, step one. Step two, verbalize and demonstrate that this actually matters. So the number of conversations that I have immediately following while I'm striking chairs at the end of the event to say, this was a wonderful event. Like you've so thoroughly crafted a message, or you've assembled such a perfect bunch of people. You created such a safe container for connection. I'm leaving feeling this and thinking this. How do I help? How could I support? What is it that you're working right now on? Or conversely, like I work with some communities on marketing strategy and community development or ritual design or helping design the mechanisms. Have you thought about this? Have you read this book? Would it make sense to have a coffee and chat more about how you're designing the community and the intentions? So the number of, this is a long way of saying that most every idea that I've been a part of, business that I've been a part of, deep friendship that I've cultivated, chosen family member that I've adopted and I can call brother and sister, have arrived from consistently showing up and seeing where they are and meeting them where they are.
And that's, and you're doing that with such empathy because of late 2016, you kind of starting anew and the journey that you've been on.
Well, starting anew. I used to think that these life transition points are like, oh, a new start, a new life. After I leave this podcast, I could start anew. Tomorrow, I could start anew. Next quarter, you know, January 1st, I can start anew. That, particularly with the approach that I think of in lifestyle design and mapping it against the seasonality of our lives, that seasons are real and we've defined them. We map them out on a calendar, and also nature doesn't really care what our calendars say. It's going to do what it wants. And we can observe the seasons and to know that tomorrow can be the start of a new season in our life. And I'll often work with clients, particularly in leadership development or lifestyle design, mapping the 12 priorities of life, or what I would call it. So an expanded wheel of life. And every moment, every day, any time I could say, you know what, this is the new priority for this season of my life. And that season could last a week or a month or 3 months. And what would it be like to live the next 3 months with experience being the priority? And how do I prioritize adventure and travel and play? And what would that look like? What would I have to say no to in order to say yes to this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's really interesting. I'd love to see if we can go a little deeper on that, because I was thinking also back to your comment about I prioritized relationships and friends and not career or capital or money, so to speak. But obviously we have to pay rent in New York. To the person that then finds the community or is going on that new season, any advice to someone that is trying to find clients and work that has a similar type of profile of some of the type of work that you do, as you mentioned, like community engagement, community development, ideation, leadership coaching, things like that?
Mm-hmm. Any advice? Well, I think about the priorities in a few ways. So I do make a distinction between in all of the work priorities to think there's often, and this may work for you, but I make a distinction between my career, the legacy that I want to leave, and my actual financial situation. And those three sometimes overlap and they sometimes don't. That as I'm prioritizing legacy, which is working toward the projects or the way that I hope to impact the world, how I'd like to be described when I'm outside the room or in the other room. Like, I often think, like, how is that person describing the type of work I do, or how they've personally interacted with or benefited me? That's what I often think of as legacy. I don't want the first thing someone to say is like, oh, Dennis is in L&D, or he's a product designer, or he's in operations, or he's selling this thing. That would be a very thin identity. And I'd be curious how, conversely, that person would then interact with me, knowing that I'm selling wellness, or I'm facilitating wellness, or I'm bringing in speakers or something. And you mentioned empathy before. I often see these identities, or the roles that I have, the way I'd be described for the work that I'm doing, as creating an empathetic block, as for the person that's the recipient or the person I'm speaking with will be addressing me in a certain way. Like, oh, well, what can I benefit from you? Or are you going to try to sell me something? Can I sell you something? Am I auditioning for you right now? Are you going to hire me? Can I hire you? And it becomes this dance, which is often lacking curiosity. But it's going in with an intent and a drive, which can shut down my ability to hear who they are or be with them and what's real for them right now. And for most everyone that I've collaborated with, for every company that I've been hired to work with and work on, and for everyone that I've hired, it's through entering conversations and demonstrating to one another that we could be of mutual value to one another. And that is what an interview is in its crudest form, is to say, like, what value do you offer? What value do I have? Is this mutually agreeable? Yes, great, you're hired. And often that 20 minutes to an hour interview is the most stilted conversation that I could ever be in. So this is why I often work with clients to just train them on interviewing and negotiating and these radically weird conversations that we are forced into from year to year, and often without practice, because how many interviews is the average person on? It isn't a normal conversation. We don't spend hours of these type of conversations a day where we could feel very practiced in it. It happens when we need to, often under pressure with added anxiety around the outcome of it and how we're being perceived and the need to look good and not look bad and look intelligent and not look dumb. And everything that I just rattled off are the things that my voice is saying inside of my head and keeping me from actually hearing what the other person is saying.
So this is job interview prep and conversation type of work?
Interview or not, like, treating every conversation as an opportunity to help someone else feel completely expressed and seen. And reaching a point of mutual understanding. So if the interview, the conversation is a phase in, again, the design process, we would think through most every conversation as information gathering and trying to find understanding. So asking the questions.
Are you able to give some examples, some really good questions? I've been on the recipient of it, but I'd love to have listeners also know some examples of your amazing questions.
We're giving away all of our secrets here, David. Was there a particular question that stood out in recent conversation?
I think that you do an amazing job of evoking emotion through your question asking and combining that with a more standard type of question. But so it's a little bit of like, how are you feeling about that? As opposed to how are you feeling? You know, it's easy to say fine, or it's easy to say good. But that's kind of what what immediately comes to my mind. In addition to when you started asking questions before we started, I was like, no, let's just start. I need to start asking you questions because of how the quality of the questions that you ask, which I think the quality of your questions determines the quality of the conversation. But I just would love to learn a little bit more in terms of how you think about asking good questions.
So I'm hearing is asking questions that elicit or invite a conversation around the emotional response. Some of the questions that I like to ask in the simplest form is, what's that like? It actually is a silver bullet. and it could be asked at almost any time. And I feel strange even giving this away. And also when friends ask me, what's that like? I think to myself, I know what you're doing. And it also works because I'm happy to share what that was like. And depending on the width of my emotional aperture in that moment, whether I'm feeling particularly effusive and can get raw and vulnerable and talk about emotional state, what's that like is an invitation to do that. Or what's that like could actually be pragmatically, this is the step-by-step that I took. This is the approach that I took. It could go from theoretical and abstract to incredibly emotional, nuanced, and personal. So being in so many of these empathetic conversations as well, I'm highly attuned to when people, in answering a question, switch out of the I to one or they, like it becomes an abstraction of a feeling. Like, oh, I started doing this thing, but you know, it's like when someone does this and I'm like, oh, so what was it like when you did it? What was your experience like? Or I'm curious, like you mentioned that when you were starting this new thing that you hit some hiccups at first. You know, how did you smooth them over? Like, how did you use your past experience from doing this thing? How do you think that may have applied to your solutions to that? Wherever I can, starting every question with a summary, a acknowledgement that I've heard something else that they've said that might be tangential, but might not. And then asking a how or a what question. Because that is both demonstrating their expertise, their knowledge, and potentially even connecting a dot that they may have not connected in their mind. And I know the number of times someone's like, oh, you mentioned before you were a teacher. And how do you think that that influences your current work with community facilitation or bringing speakers to companies? Like, well, actually, that's a great question, David. The way I would think about that is, having practiced in front of the room for 5 years and having to keep teenagers engaged over this course of time, there's nothing more intimidating than walking up to a group of high school students and trying to keep them in their seats for 90 minutes. So when I stand up in front of a conference and facilitating some sort of experience for them for which they've paid, $200 or their company is sponsoring them to be there and they're well caffeinated and they get a whole bag full of swag. And this is about content that is meaningful to them. It is much simpler to keep them in their seats and engaged from the self-selecting population rather than the ones that were, assigned to me.
The how and the what.
So when I think about storytelling arcs and particularly practical storytelling, because for years I was walking around going like, I want to practice storytelling. Where do I do that? And because I crowdsource most everything, I have my friends and my personal board of directors, the people that inform many of the decisions that I make in life. They're like, oh, try Toastmasters. I'm like, nah, I'm not interested in reading speeches. I'm not interested in that. You know, where do I practice extemporaneous storytelling? Like, where do I do this sort of thing off the cuff? And then improv was recommending. Yes, and I'd done improv years ago, and improv is wonderful, and I do storytelling practice. And also, I want to be in this. Like, how do I become a more practical storyteller where I can weave in 90-second tales that invite someone else into the experience of what it was like in this moment in my life, when I made this decision, when I felt this thing, when I noticed this thing, when I first learned this thing? And a storytelling coach, Marcia Shandor, years ago, told me the secret. And it was so obvious that I walked away literally like keeping my notes inside the fold of my jacket going like, I have this secret. I need to like run away with this. Like, what am I going to do with this now? And as I was sitting in this darkened theater, listening to her present on the secrets of storytelling, you know, she shared a very simple narrative arc, which is keep it in the moment, speak about one specific moment in time and what I thought to myself and I felt in my body. And so I did.
One moment, felt in the body, and then what you did. So the action.
So as I'm sitting there in the front seat, looking up at her and she shares these few nuggets, and I immediately feel this surge of excitement that rushes up from my stomach. And I think like, it can't be this easy. and I run out and I practice on the next person. And it was that easy. And because I know that a story is that simple, and a story is what creates an empathetic alignment and bond between that person, that empathy is an invitation into the personal, unique, subjective experience of the other person. So whenever I'm thinking, the questions that I could ask is ultimately leading that person to tell a better story and invite me into that experience of the moment, so that way the two of us in this conversation can relive that moment together. So it's questions like, oh, like what informed that decision? Or what were you thinking at the time? Or like, wow, what did it feel to be you in that moment? What does it feel like now to be sharing that? And again, these are all wider emotional aperture questions about the feelings, but feelings also be like sensing, like, what do you sense with that? You know, or what do you think is an easy one? What do you sense? Like, what would you imagine? What would you intuit? Like, did you notice anything different after that? Or like, what did you notice that was different? All of these are inviting me into the experience and helping that person tell a better story, which they probably want to anyway. And as soon as I learned this, realized that the power was in me. So I can both tell a better story and I can help someone tell a better story.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dennis. Please let listeners know how they can follow up and potentially attend some of your events and et cetera.
So I'm Dennis E. Sarkozy on Facebook. I'm D. E. Sarkozy everywhere social media is found. Make monthly playlists on Spotify. You could follow me there if you want to invite some new experiences into your life. Find me on Instagram, because I have a budding Instagram presence, even though it's another inbox I now need to check. I produce events around the city with personal development nerds. I bring wellness experiences to the East Coast with groups like Wellbeings. I travel internationally and domestically with the travel group Map and Move. It's run by Jen Lee, another who I noticed was on your podcast. Please follow up. I'm curious to hear what it is that you're working on and passionate about, and always down for a sweet green salad and a discussion over how we could change the world and the landscape of New York.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Dennis.
Thanks, David.
Hey, friend. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. I'm really excited for you to learn from this episode and would love to hear any thoughts from you and continue the conversation where I post this episode on many different social channels. Please subscribe to wherever you listen to your podcast for my weekly Portfolio Career Podcast show, and really excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.